Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Elevated Places with Dr. Ava Muhammad. Dr. Ava is a gifted attorney, researcher, lecturer, and author of 5 books. She received her Juris Doctorate from Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., and is a member of the New York Bar Association. Dr. Ava has been featured in Essence magazine many times and was named by Essence as one of America's most powerful black women. Join Dr. Ava every Thursday evening here on Blog Talk Radio, where you will hear a message that will provide you with the tools needed to repair and uplift the spirit, moral character, and living condition of the black woman. Our call-in number is 347-324-5091. Or visit us on our radio show page at blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. And now, here is your host, Dr. Ava Muhammad.
Welcome to Elevated Places. I am your host, Ava Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you. It is a blessing to be with you once again. Today is December the 27th, 2012. It is 8 p.m. Eastern Standard, and I am broadcasting live out of the Elevated Places Studios in Chicago, Illinois. And we are on Central Time here, of course, at 7:01 p.m. And I want you to know that you can visit us by logging in at blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. That's blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. This is a talk show, and therefore the listeners drive this program. And the reason it is growing with popularity so quickly is because of you, the listener, and because of the fascinating subjects and the fascinating guests that we have on. And so join us by calling in 347-324-5091. That's 347-324-5091. And join us in the discussion. And, of course, Elevated Places has a 100% win-win record in bringing you brilliance, bringing you insight, bringing you upliftment and empowerment. And that would not be possible without the Elevated Places team, among them, not the least of which, is my co-host, Brother Terrence Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Terrence.
Wow, alaikum salam.
All right, my dear brother,
yes, and we're
going to talk about what's been going on this week. I do want to mention, I meant to say to the listeners, don't forget that when you go on the show page at blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces, you can link to the Twitter and Facebook pages, and also visit avaspeaks.com for your latest lectures on CD, DVD, and also book titles. So, Brother Terrence Muhammad, talk to me about what's going on around the nation in the news.
Well, you know, we always give the greetings of Assalamu alaikum, which means peace be unto you. But tonight I want to give the greetings of Habari Gani. It is the season of Kwanzaa, and Kujijagalia is the principle for today, which means self-determination. And it's interesting that tonight on this show we're talking about self-determination, because we know in our continued conversation of separation, you know, we got to be determined to do something for ourselves. And the principle yesterday dealt with unity, and we have to come together as a people. I think one of the biggest things, and before I forget, I want everybody to tune in to NOI.org this Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, to see our wonderful sister, Dr. Ava Muhammad. She will be the keynote lecturer. She's been traveling the country. She was just in Detroit a couple of weeks ago, and also Baltimore, Maryland last week. So she's on fire. So we're going to make sure that y'all not only hear her tonight, but pay attention for this Sunday as she delivers the keynote address at the National Center for the Nation of Islam in Chicago, Illinois. But I think the biggest topic that's been going on, I know, as I say, Facebook news, but also the news is this new movie that's out. I know we'll discuss tonight, Django, which is very much so a controversial movie in the sense that is arousing discussion about slavery, is arousing discussion about a black man's love for a black woman, is discussing the real story about slavery. There's even discussion about who financed the movie, the Jewish community that financed the movie, but didn't show the Jewish involvement, in which we know the history in our book, Secret Relationships Between Blacks and Jews, their involvement in the slave trade. And at the same time when BET was running the story Roots again on TV. So there's a lot going on, and it's an interesting discussion going on in the black community about this movie and also the criticism from Spike Lee about the movie. But once again, self-determination, when will we tell our own story and begin to write our own books and put out our own publications and movies to depict the real story and the real horror and the real injustice done to black people here in America.
Yes, sir. And of course, we are looking forward to 2013. We are planning for the biggest Savior's Day event ever.
Yes.
And in keeping with the natural progress of the black nation toward, as you said, self-sufficiency and independence, at the root of which is unity. On Savior's Day 2013, that's February the 24th, Sunday, that's in Chicago, Illinois, at the University of Chicago Pavilion, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan will deliver the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's Economic Blueprint, Ending Poverty and Want. And, of course, we know that, sadly, during the course of the presidential campaign, no mention, Brother Terrence, was made on either side of the masses of poor people
in all
the United States of America at all. All of the discussion was and continues to be as Congress faces the so-called fiscal cliff, and the refusal of the Republican Party to accept the outcome of this presidential election. Even now, all of the discussion is about the middle class and the 1% and 2% wealthiest. And keep in mind that in the United States of America today, the reality is that to live a truly comfortable existence with inflation, middle class now is considered somewhere around income, annual income before adjustments, of $200,000+ a year. And you have many families in America where you have families of four living on under $20,000 a year.
Right
here in the city of Chicago, if you have an automobile and you go downtown, it will cost you $6.50 per hour just to park your car. That's on the street.
That's right.
A meter. If you decide you want to go down there and see a film, or if you have to go to court or have some business to take care of and you need to put your car in a garage, you're talking about $30 for 3 hours in a parking garage. There's a discussion on Congress's refusal to address the current farm bill, and if they don't address that in the proper manner, we're looking at the possibility that a half gallon of milk is going to cost you somewhere in the neighborhood of $8 in 2013. And,
right.
And so it is very important to hear the one and only leader, black or white, who is addressing the needs of the majority of American people who are under that, not only that 200,000, but most Americans, including Caucasian people, are under 50,000 a year. And then again, as I said, many in our community, you have four families of four and larger under 20. So the economic blueprint of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is absolutely essential. I also, before I read, you know, we talked last week, Brother Terrence, about the Newtown, Connecticut massacre. And we had an extensive and very enlightening discussion on that. And so before we close that subject, I want to read the official statement of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan on the Newtown massacre. And as I do that, I want to acknowledge the presence of another brilliant member of the Elevated Places team, our Elevated Places contributor, agricultural economist, Dr. Ridgely Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Ridgely.
Walaikum assalam, Dr. Ava Muhammad and Brother Terrence Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum assalam, sir.
It's great to have you both here. I want to say to the listeners that, Allah willing, we will be joined shortly by author, publisher, cultural historian, Anthony T. Browder. Those of you who are really astute and knowledgeable of black history and understanding and seeking knowledge of the reality that ancient African people were the architects of civilization, this is a not-to-miss interview and discussion. But let me do this now. I want to read, this is a very brief and profound statement. It was released the next morning. We were on last December 20th, and the next morning Minister Farrakhan issued this statement. It is terrible to witness what we just witnessed in the slaying of these children. Every life has a purpose. Innocent life is more valuable in the sight of God. So when innocent life is sacrificed, what lesson should we learn from such a tremendous sacrifice, tremendous suffering, tremendous pain? Why should our president, a father, shed tears over the precious lives that were torn away from their parents and friends? It is to help a nation see that guns and the weapons of war cannot bring about the joy, happiness, and peace that was robbed from the people of Newtown. And hopefully, the President of the United States sending drones into Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia, Afghanistan, and other places, killing men, women, and children, and the word says collateral damage, and we go on killing. Could it be that these precious lives lost and the pain that it has caused every one of us who shares the pain of those parents and those loved ones who lost these precious children and the lives of the teachers who taught them, could it be that God wants us to see that until you can feel the pain and suffering of others that has been inflicted upon them on the basis of a lie, and America's reach for the resources of that area of the world, then maybe you will understand that this may be chickens coming home to roost. Mm-hmm. For as thou hast done, the book says, so shall it be done unto you. And you can go to finalcall.com and read that statement from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan on the massacre at Newtown, Connecticut. And so as we await the arrival on the line of Anthony Browder, there is a lot going on in the world around us. And, of course, we first have to thank Allah that 12-21-12 did not indicate the physical end of the earth.
Right.
And of the world. But as we have been taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Minister Louis Farrakhan, the world that we are at the end of is the world of white supremacy. And so Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Yeah, one other thing I wanted to jump in. I just really wanted to encourage all the listeners once again to start making sure everybody tune in. But we also want to make sure that as the site, NOI.org is the site for you to go to here. So the AVO on Sunday at 11 a.m., we want you to go ahead and get your ticket for this earth-shattering lecture that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan will be giving at the UIC Pavilion. The venue will be sold out, and we're expecting an early sellout. So we want to make sure that if you're going, that you get to Chicago and make your way to the UIC Pavilion. But one of the things I did want to read after I read that statement by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, that last piece on that, it makes me go to, since we have our guest Anthony Browder tonight, in his book From the Browder Files, on page 57, he says, "What is happening in no uncertain terms is the law of karma in operation. Karma is the universal law of reciprocity, better known as cause and effect. After the assassination of President John Kennedy, Malcolm X referred to this phenomenon as American chicken coming home to roost. In more similar terms, he was describing what goes around comes around." And so as we hear that statement from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, like you said, it wasn't the physical end, but everything that has been done is coming back around. As I go back to that movie Django and knowing the outcome of what happened in that movie with Jamie Foxx, it just seemed like the turn of events are coming. So we need to be mindful, and those that, as we talked, I think, last week about how the Republican Party knew this was their last chance, this was their last hope of succeeding by not having Obama get back in a second term, but he made it in. So they see their world, and they see this karma coming back quickly towards them.
Well, that's a perfect segue into our next segment with our guest, Anthony Browder, and we are blessed to have him joining us on the line. And before I welcome him, I want to share with the listeners, if you are not familiar with this brilliant man, tonight is your night. And if you are, I know you're excited. Anthony T. Browder is an author, publisher, cultural historian, artist, and an educational consultant. He is a graduate of Howard University's College of Fine Arts and has lectured extensively throughout the United States, Africa, Caribbean, Mexico, Japan, and Europe on issues related to African and African-American history and culture. Brother Browder is the founder and director of IKG Cultural Resources and has devoted 30 years researching ancient Egyptian history, science, philosophy, and culture. He has traveled to Egypt 47 times since 1980 and is currently director of the ASA Restoration Project, which is funding the excavation and restoration of the 25th Dynasty tomb of, and I hope he'll correct me if I'm wrong, that's Karakhamun in Luxor, Egypt. Brother Browder is the first African-American to fund and coordinate an archaeological dig in Egypt and has led 5 archaeological missions to Egypt since 2009. His 3 decades of study have led him to the conclusion that ancient Africans were the architects of civilization and developed the rudiments of what has become the scientific, religious, and philosophical backbone of mankind. It is from this framework that IKG has concentrated its research and disseminated its findings. Through IKG, Mr. Browder sponsors lectures, seminars, cultural field trips of Washington, D.C., and publishes his research, and he has conducted study tours to Egypt, West Africa, South Africa, and Mexico since 1987. He is the author of 6 publications, and I know many of you are familiar with these bestsellers, From the Browder File, and, of course, Nile Valley Contributions to Civilization. He is the co-author of 4 publications, including 2 written with his 30-year-old daughter, she's now 30, Atlantis Tai. All of Mr. Browder's publications are currently being used in classrooms around the world. He describes himself as a chronicler of facts and information relative to the positive portrayal of the worldwide African experience. And we are so blessed to have him live on the Elevated Places guest line, Brother Anthony Browder. Brother, assalamu alaikum, peace be unto you, welcome. We are so happy that you took time to be with us.
Walaikum salam, Dr. Muhammad and Hotep, and it's my pleasure to be on the airways with you at long last.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Your scholarship, of course, is renowned, and I am joined on the line with Dr. Ridgely Muhammad, who is an agriculture economist and also a great admirer of your work, as well, of course, as Brother Terrence Muhammad, my co-host. And the listeners are queuing up. I mean, we're probably not going to be able to handle all of those who are trying to get on the phone. And I do want to remind the listeners that as they tweet and notify everyone on Facebook that you are on, that endless people, countless people can log in to blogtalkradio.com/ Elevated Places to hear Brother Anthony Browder. And so, Brother Anthony, this is an informal show. Of course, it's a relaxed and casual program. And so no matter what format we follow, it's going to be up to you to talk about what you feel comfortable with. But one of the things we want to bring to the attention of the listeners is the documentary, Hidden Colors and then Hidden Colors 2, which was actually in selected U.S. theaters earlier this month, if I'm not mistaken. And I did want you to definitely, before we go any further, and Dr. Ridgely and Brother Terrence have some questions, could you tell us about Hidden Colors and Hidden Colors 2?
Sure. Well, Hidden Colors is a documentary series that is directed and produced out of the West Coast by Tariq Nasheed. And from what my distributor had shared with me last year, Hidden Colors, the original Hidden Colors, was the best-selling black DVD in the country last year. Brother Nasheed is a young brother. He's in his early 40s. And just recently became aware of the plethora of historical knowledge of the accomplishments of African people throughout the world, of which he refers to as Hidden Colors. And so the first documentary was him speaking to a number of experts about their expertise, their knowledge about African contributions to America, to Asia, to Europe, and around the world. And I was contacted about a year ago and invited to participate in the production of Hidden Colors 2, which was just released. It'll be 3 weeks tomorrow. And Hidden Colors 2 is a rousing success. All of the screenings in selected theaters throughout the United States were sold out. The DVD is available, and we're planning to have a screening at our facility in Washington, D.C. on the 11th of January, and I'll be participating in several other screenings on the East Coast as well. So it's, you know, I definitely have to give Brother Tariq Nasheed credit for tapping into a young market, specifically African-Americans between the ages of 20 and 45, who have little or no information about African contributions to history and culture. And what he's done in these two documentaries is bring together a series of people who talk about specific aspects of our history, and he's sandwiched it in between video footage and still photographs, and crafted a piece that is designed to raise the awareness or awareness of and appreciation for African history. And he's really struck a nerve, and it's going to be a major game changer.
Well, we are very, very excited about it.
And, you know, I want to jump in here. This is Brother Terrence, Dr. Barada. I know Dr. Ridgett is on here, and he was one of my mentors at the other great university, HBCU, North Carolina A&T State University. But I say this, and I thank you on behalf of all of those conscious brothers and sisters that came up in the 90s that this book from the Broader File was our, as the nation has message to the black men, this was the black conscious book from the Broader File, along with Stolen Legacy, you know, Destruction of African Civilization, Chancellor Williams. But the Broader File was the best book that any of us could pass on, because it was a very great read, very easy to read, and it hit the point. And it started people on their journey. And then when you came out with Nile Valley Civilization, that was just the perfect segue to, like, class 200. You know, we was in 101 at first, and then this is 201. So I thank you on behalf of all those conscious brothers. Before I joined, this was my path in coming into the nation of consciousness, and it grew me into the love of history and the love of our people. And I will ask a question. What do you see, or how do you see the change? And we talk about hidden colors, but how do you see that change of that once level of consciousness that we used to see on the black college campuses, and that thriving, you know, the Renoka Rashidis, the Oshawa Kwesis that was constantly going on campus? What do you see the change from the early 90s to now, as far as getting that information out? Like you said, there's a gap or some missing history.
Sure. Well, let me just back up for a second. I came into an awareness of my African history and culture late 1970s, early 1980s, and I was blessed, I was fortunate to be groomed by some of the best scholars living at that time, A.C. Hilliard, John Henry Clark,
right.
John Jackson, Yosef Ben Yochanan, Ivan Van Sertima, and you know, Leonard Jeffries, and, you know, some of the Shashi McIntyre. So I was blessed to be in their company and to be guided and directed by them, and to be there on the onset of the African-centered movement, late 80s, early 90s. And I thought at that time that we made it. This information is going to be made available to black folk around the world, and we're going to achieve freedom. But one of the mistakes that we made during that time frame, late 80s, early 90s, is that we were naive enough to believe that the white man was just going to let us free ourselves and walk away. But what we didn't expect was for them to come up with countermeasures to derail the African Center movement, which is exactly what they did. They moved on Leonard Jeffries. We all know the story about how his life was threatened, and he spent 3 years wearing a bulletproof vest. And Van Sertima was faced with academic challenges at Rutgers, and Hunter Adams lost his job at Argonne National Laboratories, and a number of folk were forced to literally go underground because this society was not ready for African people to ascend to their rightful place in the world stage or right here in America. And so with the advent of this assault against black people freeing their minds, we had a uptick in negative propaganda, uptick in gangster rap, uptick in these reality shows that were designed specifically to turn African people, black people into Negroes, to dumb us down. And then hand in hand with that, you had this ongoing assault within school systems all around the country, this advent of the charter school movement, which is nothing more than an attempt by the dominant society to segregate school systems as they began to move back into the inner city. So with a historical perspective, we can look back at that period of time and see how all of these moves were set in motion, which brings us to today. Today, I'm beginning to see a resurgence of interest in Black history, in African history, in world history. And it's the young folk who realize now that they've been miseducated, and they're looking for something to give their life meaning. So Hidden Colors is a major step in helping to cultivate within our young minds a greater appreciation for reading, knowledge, and travel. So if we follow through on this new wave that's coming and continue this path, this appreciation for history and culture and science and learning, then we can be a part of this major change that is coming not just to America but all over the world. And, you know, I appreciate what you all are doing here at this radio station. You are a catalyst for this change, and I'm trusting that more people will understand what time it is and wake up and begin to assume their rightful place in this consciousness-raising movement.
Very powerful. Dr. Ridgely, I know you had some questions for Dr. Browder.
Well, number one, the one of the parts that Terrence did not talk about Tony Browder's works is he has some great words, but he got some pictures.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He got a lot of pictures. And I'm looking here at on page 232 of the Nile Valley Civilization, and the politics of hell in the Nile Valley. You know when how they jumped on her because of her hair. Can you talk about a little bit of the politics? First of all, I see these naps on these pharaohs. What's important about naps on pharaohs, Browder?
Well, let's look at two things. If we go back to the Hidden Colors 2 documentary, it was Professor James Small who talked about hair is, you know, African hair is designed specifically in order to cool our brains so that we can function at a higher level of consciousness. And the hair that African people have is like an antenna that amplifies our consciousness and puts us into direct access with the creative consciousness. So when you look at the wigs on the second floor of the Cairo Museum, you see the wigs of the priests, and you see that those wigs are afros. Those wigs are locks. And these were the hairstyles that were worn by Africans in ancient Kemet. When you go downstairs on the first floor of the Cairo Museum and you see statues of kings from the Old Kingdom, the ones who were responsible for building the pyramids, you see that they're wearing their hair in locks. If you ever see the back of the mask of King Tut, you'll notice that he is wearing his hair in locks, and those locks have been pulled back in a ponytail. So what you're seeing is, in looking at the hair, is you're seeing evidence of the fact that these are African people and not the Caucasians masquerading as Egyptians that we see on National Geographic or Discovery Channel, or more specifically, the people who came and conquered that land long after the creators of that civilization had fallen. So, you know, we have to make a distinction between Kemet and Egypt. Kemet is the original name of that country. The word Kemet means, in the original language, the nation of the black people, not the black soil, not the black land, but the nation of the black people. Egypt is a Greek word that was used to describe one temple in the northern part of that nation state, a temple that was dedicated to Ptah. And the Greeks had a difficult time saying Haka Ptah, which is the temple of Ptah, and that was linguistically expressed as Agaptah, which eventually became Ajapt or Egypt. So we have to orient ourselves to the people of the land when they were there creating the land, as opposed to the people who came there as discoverers and conquerors much later on and then lay claim to everything that had been built before.
Well, brother,
that is so insightful. Go ahead, Dr. Rizvi, and
what's the politics of this? I mean, what's the big deal? I mean, so they were Napa-headed Negroes who built the pyramids and so what's the big deal? Why would they want to hide that from the world?
Okay,
I mean, what does it matter?
Okay, well, let's back up. First of all, these were not Negroes because the word Negro didn't come into existence until 1444, right?
Mm.
These were African people, and they specifically referred to themselves as Kemu or Kemtu, people of Kemet. They were specifically black people. So the issue that we're dealing with is that ancient Kemet is the oldest documented civilization on this planet. It is in Kemet where we can find the greatest evidence of nation state building, kings, a middle class. We find the first examples of architecture, engineering, government, the first tax system developed by human beings, agriculture, astronomy, philosophy. All of these things were developed in the Nile Valley by indigenous African people, but yet this story has been told by non-African people. So the issue that we're grappling with is if that Kemet is the oldest documented civilization on this planet, the people of Kemet were responsible for giving the world religion in the various forms that they exist now. So if this great civilization was founded by African people before there was civilization in Europe, then how do you explain the descendants of these same people being enslaved now all over the world?
Yes.
So what the Europeans who classified themselves as scholars or Egyptologists did was they had to remove black people from Kemet by calling it Egypt, and then they went one step further and removed Egypt from Africa, put Egypt in the Middle East. and so it was about... You know, everyone is familiar with the term identity theft. Well, the first example of identity theft is Kemet. They stole the identity of the Kemites and then used that history, that culture, the science and philosophy, all of that cultural greatness as a means of placing themselves in a position that they never earned and didn't deserve. So part of what I represent is an effort of African and African-American scholars who are going in, doing the primary research to document in text and in images who these people were and what they've done. And our goal is to share this information with our community specifically so that we can begin to restore our historical memory and then act on what we know to be true as opposed to continuing to respond to the false truths that have been given to us over 13 generations.
Yes, sir. And, you know, you answered, you already spoken to the point I wanted to raise, and that is the identity theft. That's so beautifully said and so clear. You know, the current issue of the Final Call focuses on the fact that even in the face of the revelation for quite a long time now that Jesus was a black man, the United States continues to import his image as a Caucasian. And, you know, I remember growing up, and even when my husband and I've only been once to Egypt, and, you know, that's obviously you can't even scratch the surface, but all of the travel books continue to this day to say, visit Egypt and Africa. You know, as though these are two different continents. And when we went down to Aswan, which is actually the home of the father of Master Farad Muhammad, the teacher of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and we encountered the most beautiful black people. And my husband was conversing with one who spoke very little English, and my husband only knew two or three words of Arabic. But they were having this long black man encounter, more with passion and body language.
Uh-huh.
But when my husband was explaining to this brother and some of his friends that in America, Moses and Jesus and the pharaohs are all being portrayed as white men. They were shocked. They were mortified by this.
Well, you know, everyone everywhere has been subjected to some degree of miseducation. And so we have to understand the reason why. If a people are ignorant of themselves, if they don't know their history, if they don't know their ancestry, then they will never be able to live up to their true potential as human beings. And the way that this world has been governed, at least over the last 2,000 years, has been by denying people access to their historical memory, their ancestral memory, and then filling their minds with lies and falsehoods. So, you know, I've been to parts of Egypt myself, had conversations with people from Aswan who are the Nubians, who are the descendants of the original inhabitants of that land, not the Arabs who came there in 648 and conquered the land. And even they, the Nubians there, don't know their history because a lot of it has been wiped out, along with many of the Nubians who were killed back in 1965 when they built the Aswan Dam and created Nubia Lake, which was at that time the largest man-made lake in the world. You had over 3,000 Nubians who were flooded out of their land, who lost their lives. And underneath that body of water, Lake Nubia, are hundreds and maybe thousands of tombs, temples, and monuments that would show the world who the creators of this ancient civilization were. They've been destroyed, and that destruction is still going on as we speak in the Sudan. They have built three of five planned dams in the Sudan, which will further destroy temples, monuments, and other structures that were built by the Kushite people, who were related to the Kemites. It was the Kushites who established the 25th dynasty in Kemet and rescued ancient Kemet from the Libyans and the Assyrians, and ushered in the 25th dynasty, which was ancient Kemet's last great walk in the sun. So there are still efforts right now to erase African people from their own history and culture so that we will not have the benefit that people all over the world have of knowing who they are and then living up to their potential as human beings.
Hey, can I add something to this?
Yes, sir, and then we'll go to the phones after that. So right
okay. Yes, you know, to bring this to how this, when it gets down to economics and politics, if you have two people giving you advice, one of them is white and the other is black, we will accept the opinion of the white because we've been taught that they are superior and we are inferior. However, suppose that advice, say you is given to you advice on how to run your government, is given you by a white person who is planning to rip you off of all your resources. But you don't listen to the black one because you've been taught that the white man is the father of civilization, the Greeks and all that. That's the importance of this type of topic because it affects human behavior right now as to who you're going to listen to, who you're going to take advice from, and who you're going to follow in your everyday life.
And hand in hand with that, brother, is that if you also make the Son of God white, then anybody with a white face represents God and his son. So it's a psychological game. It's a historical game. It's a cultural game. It's an economic game. It's a political game. It's a game on all levels that's being played. And if folk don't realize it, but the game is over. You know, the game is over. There's a new wave of consciousness that is coming.
Yes.
Well, we've got people lined up to talk to you. Excellent point, Dr. Ridgely. Excellent point. Because sometimes we're dismissive of history, which is all part of this scheme. Is not only do we have the wrong history, we have a lack of understanding of the value of history. But we've got Sister Peggy is on the line. Sister Peggy, welcome to Elevated Places. You had a question for Dr. Browder.
Yes, ma'am.
As-salamu alaykum.
As-salamu alaykum to the entire discussion. I'm sorry. As-salamu alaykum to the entire panel for discussion. But my question for Dr. Browder is, how in the world did you manage to lead an archaeological expedition into Egypt, especially with this Caucasian backlash? How did you do it? That is a coup in itself.
No, it's a matter of being in the right place at the right time and knowing that the Creator and the ancestors are always working for the highest good. I had a very good friend who's an Egyptian brother who had been my guide for 21 years, introduced me to a woman who was conducting an excavation. This woman was Dr. Elena Pishtakova, a Russian-born Egyptologist who was trained in the United States, who was excavating the tomb of Karakamun. And she gave me a personal tour of the tomb and told me of her struggles to excavate this tomb. Now, the 25th dynasty is unique in that it's the only period in Egyptian history that white Egyptologists will acknowledge was ruled by black people. The kings of the 25th dynasty came from Kush, or modern-day Sudan. And because Dr. Lena is an expert in the 25th dynasty, and because she's from Russia and did not grow up with American racism, she knew that these were black people. She also knew that these black people of the 25th dynasty were connected to the original founders of Kemet, and that she looked for and found this tomb in 2006. And she was unable to get funding for this excavation from her white colleagues, principally because she was digging up a black past that they did not want to be excavated. So she quit her job and used her own money to finance this excavation. And when I met her 2 years into the excavation, she had run out of money and barely scratched the surface. But because of my relationship with Dr. Asa Hilliard and John Henry Clark and Dr. Ben and Ivan Van Sertima and others, I understood the importance of that discovery and made a commitment to her to raise money so that that excavation could continue. So the primary reason why I'm excavating today or leading the Asa Restoration Project right now is because I came in with a passion to do this work and with money. So the project, the Asa Restoration Project, is named in honor of my colleague, Dr. Asa Hilliard, who died in Egypt August 13th, 2007. So what better way for me to honor a man who has helped me so many times in my life than to name this project in his memory, so that as we're resurrecting the tomb of Karakamun, we could elevate the name of Dr. Asa Hilliard so that the world would know of these two African men and the significance of their contribution to the world. So that's how I got in. And so since 2009, we have raised over $1.5 million Egyptian pounds, which is approximately $170,000. That has been used to finance the excavation. We excavate 4 months out of the year, May through August, at the cost of about $10,000 a month. We have about 75 people, Egyptians, on our payroll who are the excavators, who are the conservators. We also pay for supplies, equipment, men to guard this site when we're not there. And I'm so proud to say that the African American community, by and large, has financed this project. We have the Asa Restoration Project is a 501c3. So if anybody's listening wants to make a contribution and write it off on their 2012 taxes, you can do so by going to our website, asarestorationproject.com. Make a contribution, and we will acknowledge you in everything that we do.
Oh, do you get any pushback from that Egyptian, from that, the one that's always on the National Geographic? I can't.
Oh, no. You're talking about Zahir Waz. Zahir Waz is now persona non grata. When Mubarak was thrown out of office last year, Zahi Awas was one of the first to go. You know, even Egyptians didn't like Zahi. He's arrogant, he's belligerent, he's a bully, he's a very selfish and self-centered person. And so he's been replaced. He was the minister of antiquities. He's been replaced. And as a result of the change of government in Egypt last year, our mission was the first foreign mission to return to Egypt after the revolution. And as I said, we employ approximately 75 Egyptians. We pay them every week. They're able to put food on their table, clothes on the back of their children. They look out for us. They respect us. And so they have a great affinity for what we are doing for them and the work in excavating this tomb. And this work was acknowledged this past August. On August the 3rd, we had an opportunity to meet the newly elected president, the only elected president of Egypt in the modern era, President Morsi. Wanted to meet us because of the contributions that we made to the Egyptian government, and he acknowledged that we have been helping to develop and maintain a strong Egyptian-American relationship.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that, and I'm just my hat's off to you, and thank you for all of your work, and I'm looking forward to hear more and more about the information that you get from the ancient tomb that you that the Russian archaeologists discovered. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
And thank you for that question, so that the listeners can get that profound enlightenment, something of this magnitude that is going on as we speak. This is phenomenal. We've got Brother Lewis on the line waiting to ask a question. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Lewis.
Wa alaikum salam, family. How y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
Doing good. Brother Browder, I met you when you came to Baton Rouge with Brother Baye and Sister Nanzamo. And as Brother Terrence was talking, he really brought back a lot of memories about how encouraging your book was. We read it when we were in the military as part of our study group. But I do have just a question. My question is it what would it take, and I have seen Hidden Colors is really good. We were using it for the think tank also. What would it take to have a showing of Hidden Colors, perhaps at like a Savior's Day? Has anyone thought about anything like that?
Well, let me just put a bug in your ear. Tariq Nassim is making it possible for people to screen Hidden Colors. We've got three screenings planned next month. Actually, four screenings planned next month. You can go online and make contact with them. But essentially, the process is very simple. He's asking for a $500 screening fee to show the film and the purchase of at least 30 DVDs at the wholesale price. So, you know, it's a reasonable...
What is the wholesale price for the DVD?
The wholesale price for the DVDs is $10.
Okay.
And the DVD retails for $25.
Okay.
So he's making it possible for this exciting documentary to be shown anywhere. And I really want to encourage your listeners to support this brother and other brothers such as myself who produce DVDs. As a matter of fact, I just returned from Philadelphia this evening where we're doing a documentary for on the excavation. So I was there taping that. But you know, I want your audience to know how important it is that our community support our authors and our film producers, because you know we don't get big grants from various agencies. We don't get money from corporations. You know, we have to dig into our pockets to finance these undertakings, and so it's so critically important that folk in the community don't bootleg these DVDs, you know, and sell them on the black market. You know, it's so important. If we honor the work that these scholars are doing to raise our consciousness, then the least thing that we can do is to respect the integrity of their work by purchasing their works from a respectable outlet, and hopefully that outlet is an African-American-owned outlet. You know, you can purchase these items at Amazon and other places, but we have to understand the value of supporting our own. That is, I can't overemphasize that point.
That's right.
You're right. You can't overemphasize it. That is such good teaching. And also, we teach by example, you know, and we're teaching our children and helping them to develop character when we show respect for the work of those among us who are making the sacrifices to give this knowledge to us. Thank you, brother. Yes, sir. Go right in.
Just a short question. I wanted to ask this actually last week, but I think it's applicable to this week also because I heard Brother Browder talking about the resurgence of consciousness coming back. In the Bible, in the seventh chapter of Exodus, the seventh verse, it says that Moses was 80 and Aaron was 83 when they went to Pharaoh. Does this have anything to do with all of us coming together, coming to the reality that we all should push behind Minister Farrakhan and trying to separate ourselves from this group that constantly oppresses us? And I'll just listen for anyone who would care to comment. Thank y'all.
Okay, thank you, brother. You know, given the reality, given where the majority of our people are, one of the points that Brother Umar Johnson raised in the Hidden Colors 2 DVD, in the solutions portion of that documentary, talked about the significance of African Americans investing in Africa. You know, investing in the gold mines and the diamond mines and the oil rigs. You know, if we think about it, you know, African Americans are the wealthiest and best educated people of African ancestry on the planet. And we are not having the impact on the continent of Africa that we should and could be having because we've been brainwashed to believe that Africa has nothing of value. And as a consequence, you've got Europeans who are now in Africa buying up millions of acres of land every month. You've got the Japanese, Koreans, Chinese are in Africa right now because they realize that Africa is the future. So, you know, we should begin to find creative ways of raising or producing more favorable images of Africa in the minds of our people so that we can see that Africa is something to be proud of and begin to invest in that so that those of us who are prepared to go to Africa will have a place to go to that is ours and go there with the ability to make a creative contribution to the land. We can't just come there saying that we come home and don't have any skills to add to the development of that nation. So we've got resources that need to be cultivated. We've got young folk here who can't find a decent job. But we should think in terms of going, whether it's going to Africa, going to the Caribbean, and creating jobs, creating institutions that will supply us with everything that we need.
And so, Dave, I just want to jump in here because one of the things he just mentioned, you know, there's some that Minister Farrakhan just got off the Caribbean tour and talking about the Caribbeans coming together and doing some for themselves as we're looking at, like I said, the principles of Kwanzaa yesterday, Umoja, and, you know, starting the unity and now Kujichagulia and having self-determination for their own people. But I wanted to read something from Brother Broder's from his book Avatar Revisited, and it's on page 50, and he says, "The real message in Avatar is not about race or Jake. It's about destiny. The message that comes through loud and clear is every life has a purpose when you are in tune with your creator. You are in balance with the universe, and you will find your purpose and fulfill your destiny." And he says, "This is the message that James Cameron has conveyed to hundreds of millions of people around the world who have seen Avatar, that the people who claim the right are not always righteous, and the oppressed, colonized, and marginalized people of the earth have a right to practice their own traditions and worship their deity through their own cultural lenses. And it just made me think about this whole conversation of separation, where we need to have our own and do for self, so that we can practice our own culture and our own way of life. And I think when he talks about us supporting our own, when Dr. Ridge is down on the farm and we have 1,600 acres of land, we need to buy food from our own land. We need to buy them from our own black farmers, as well as support those that are giving us our real history in real time. So, I mean, I think, as we know, we have to learn how to pull together and do something for ourselves and respect the integrity. And I do like the fact that he did say, and it makes me think about the strength of the FOI, the military arm of the Nation of Islam, because he's not under no false illusion that they do not need security over there when they're gone to make sure it's guarded. Because I think Dr. Ridgely mentioned before that even then, brother, you can probably talk about it, they're trying, you know, as we see them trying to close access to certain historical sites and making everything digital, so the digital pictures of our ancestors will be more of a white complexion or white altogether, and then our history will be written out. And that's really what they're trying to do. So they don't want what he's doing to be done, because they really want us to totally be written out of history.
And that's why it's so important that we spread news of it and encourage and solicit the support of it. And I'm still back on the Reverend Lewis talked into what was on my mind about a screening during the Savior's Day Convention and at other events of Hidden Colors, too, because, you know, this work that you're doing, Dr. Brown, is such a key and indispensable component of the desire, because the desire is what feeds the will, and it's only knowledge of the greatness of our history that will help motivate what Minister Farrakhan just got through saying, as you said, Brother Terrence, in the Caribbean. He was stressing the same thing, unity, and apprising them of the same problem that Europeans, Americans, Chinese, Japanese, everybody in the world is coming into the Caribbean, buying up thousands and even millions of acres of land, while we're satisfied with being island nations and not understanding the importance of pooling our resources as we're taught. But we got Brother Khalifa is on the line, and he has a comment on the discussion. Brother Khalifa, welcome to Elevated Places. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam, Sister Dr. Ava and Brother Dr. Ridgely and Brother Terrence, and to Brother Broder. I'd like to make a comment and a question. First, the comment is in the form of a little information. And it's in line with what we're talking about tonight. I was listening to the Tom Joyner show this couple of days ago on Christmas, and he's out for his Christmas vacation. He had another set of people, and lo and behold, they come up with, and I just looked at it a couple hours ago online. Now, you know the King James version of the Bible. They got one now called Queen. You hear me? Queen James. And they said they made it in his honor and his debt to him. And like Dr. Brawley was saying earlier, the game's up, the gig is up, see. And we know that they took everything from us and whatnot, but just to see how they've fallen apart. And I read some of the lines in this Bible called Queen James Bible in honor of him, because Dr. Wesley Muhammad had wrote a couple articles and told us how he was, you know, bisexual, et cetera, et cetera. And doing his the people in his court, he had a wife, a female wife, but he had so many, you know, boyfriends that his own people in his kingdom called him Queen James. So I just wanted to share that with everybody. It's right in line with the decay and everything falling down. Now my question to Brother Broder is, I was talking with my brother-in-law Muhammad Shabazz. He was saying that he heard that there in Egypt it's a team or group of people going around destroying the different signs off of the monuments and whatnot and the hieroglyphics. And my question is, have you heard anything or seen anything to that effect? That's all I have to say.
Well, I can say that there has been a concerted effort for at least 500 years. This is certainly nothing new. To destroy certain glyphs, to remove images from the walls of temples and tombs. And, you know, one of the benefits of having traveled to Egypt 48 times is that I see things disappear over time. Good case in point, on my study tour this past July, we went to the Temple of Abydos. Abydos is the site of the first temple ever built on this planet. It was the site of the first sacred pilgrimage known to mankind. And in the Temple of Abydos, there is a treasure room where they kept the vessel that we refer to today as the Ark of the Covenant. Every temple in Kemet had a vessel that we would, of what we would call today the Ark of the Covenant. So this is nothing. This is nothing new, nothing unique to the people of the Jewish religion, Jewish faith. But in this treasure room, there was graffiti painted on the walls. Now, who painted the graffiti, I don't know. But I saw it first, my first trip to Egypt in 1980. On one wall, you had Coptic crosses. And on another wall, you had Stars of David or Seals of Solomon. But this year, when I went into that same room, the crosses were still on the wall, but the Stars of David had been erased. So when I asked the guard what happened to the Stars of David, he emphatically stated, oh, there was nothing there. There was nothing there. And the beautiful thing about it is I've got photographs of before and after. So there's been this ongoing effort by various people to erase different aspects of history that they disagree with. So, you know, history is exactly what the word says, his story. And whenever people are in power, they tell the story that they want you to know. And if the story happens to disagree with their particular version of history or their particular interpretation of God, then they feel well within their right to destroy that image because it contradicts that which they believe.
Can I ask a question? Brother Browder.
Yes, sir.
In the back of the Temple of 71, is there a Syrian still back there filling water?
Is there what now?
There's a Syrian behind the temple at Abydos. The Temple of 71?
Yes.
Have you been behind there?
I can't make out what you're saying. Could you say it again?
Okay. Behind the Temple of Abydos. At Abydos is the Temple of 71.
Yes.
Okay. Behind that is the Osirian.
Yes.
They call it the Osirian. These columns that are filled with water, this huge lake with these columns in it. Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I've been down in there. I've been down in there, brother. Those who have studied this history, the history of Kemet, not the history of Egypt, those who have studied the history of Kemet know beyond a shadow of a doubt that that civilization is thousands of years older than what is publicly acknowledged. You know, the date that is commonly given for the unification of Kemet and the establishment of the first nation state is 3200 B.C.
Mm-hmm.
But for those who have studied that culture, know that that civilization is at least 2,000 to 3,000 years older.
Mm-hmm.
That information has been suppressed for a variety of reasons. One, it was first suppressed in the 19th century by a German Egyptologist who happened to be a devout Christian who believed in the literal interpretation of the Bible that God created the earth in the year 4000 B.C. So how could you have a civilization that existed before God created the earth? So what they did was they backdated the finds in Kemet to 3200 B.C., so it would fit their religious construct. So when you looked at the Osirian, which is behind the temple of Seti I at Abydos, what you are seeing is the ruins of a temple that was built during the same time frame as the pyramids and the Temple of the Sphinx. You're seeing stone blocks that weigh in excess of 25,000 pounds. All right? The only time you see construction of that magnitude is Old Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
So the belief was that it was at the Asarion where the body of Asar was buried. And so part of that, the purpose of that water that that you see in that area is that it symbolizes a large stone block that was placed in the middle of that water where the body of Asar was located, because it was to represent the Nile River where his body had been dismembered by his brother Set. If you remember the story, his body was dismembered by Set and thrown into the Nile River. So it represents the remembering, the physical remembering of Asar's body and placing it on a cenotaph surrounded by water to recreate that scene of his death. And so that's a very important architectural feature. And what we found 2 years ago in our excavation of Karakamun's tomb is that same element has been incorporated into Karakamun's tomb.
Well, wasn't that same element also down at the Giza Plateau in terms of the Valley Temple, in terms of the same type of construction?
Well, that's my point, the Valley Temple and the Temple of the Sphinx, same type of construction built in the same era.
Now, are they still pumping water out from there? Because when I was there in 1989, they were pumping water from beneath the floor of the Valley Temple. Are they still doing that now?
Well, yeah, because what happened was with the creation of Lake Nasser in 1965, it raised the water table throughout all of Egypt. And so every major temple in Egypt is now being destroyed by the water, which is literally leaching up through the sand, through the soil, being absorbed into the rock of the temple and causing the outer surface of many of these temples to literally flake off. So all of those major sites from Aswan all the way to the Giza Plateau are being salvaged by digging a underground trench with a pumping system in place to pump the water away from these structures so that they won't collapse into the soil.
But also, wasn't there also a fable that Osiris was buried underneath the Giza Plateau? I know Herodotus was talking about that, that's where he was being buried there, on the water as well.
Well, I mean, there's numerous stories, and as you go forward in time, the stories become more elaborate. But the basic story that everyone goes by is that Asar's body was cut into 14 pieces. He was killed by his brother Set, and his body was cut into 14 pieces and scattered throughout all of Kemet. And Set found 13 of the 14 parts of Asar's body, and that supposedly where all of the major temples were constructed were locations where Set found a specific body part of Asar. And it was at Abydos where supposedly the head of Asar was found.
Yeah.
So after Aset reconstituted the body of her husband, placed his 13 body parts together, and then wrapped them up, creating the first mummy in recorded history, it is believed, based on what I've studied, that she buried him at Abydos. And that was the reason why from the time of the beginning of that story, and that story is part mythology and part history. So from the beginning of that story, all of the kings of Kemet sought to be buried at Abydos, or Abdu, where Asar was buried. And I just found out this past October when I was in Egypt for a conference that there are tombs of princes from the 25th dynasty who are buried at Abydos. Now, in all of my years, 30 years of traveling to Egypt, 33 years of traveling to Egypt, no one ever told me in all of my trips to Abydos that there were Kushite tombs at that site. So that's going to be another point of investigation for me in the coming year.
Okay. I got zero questions, but I'm not going to do it. I got 1 billion, but I'm not going to do it.
Let me run to the phone and then we'll come back. I'm absolutely I'm sitting here with my mouth hanging open. I'm just fascinated. We have Brandon calling with a question. Assalamu alaikum, Brandon. Brother Brandon, welcome to Elevated Places.
I have two questions. One is,
sure,
where can we purchase these DVDs at if we're not going to attend Savior's Day? And my other question is, in your studies, I forget the name of the brother that's doing all the study with the traveling, studying the pyramids.
Tony Browder.
Yes, sir, say that again, please.
Tony Browder.
Okay, Brother Tony. Was it mentioned, or did you find any statements or any kind of facts stating that we came from a different planet or any other thing or something like that? Because I always look at the pyramids on TV, me and my son, and he asked me questions about, like, the drawings and things, about the UFOs, as they like to call them. And I can't really tell him much about them because I don't know.
Right.
But I just wanted to ask you, like, is it any scientific evidence that we was from a different planet and then created Earth by any chance?
Well, let me tell you what I know, right? I've got a lot of theories that are just theories, but I want to tell you what I know, because it's very important for us, specifically for people of African ancestry, to talk about what we know, not what we think, right?
Right.
Because there's enough facts out here, substantiated facts, that will allow us to build a level of intelligence and awareness that will eventually allow us to make some conjectures that may have some trace of truth in them in the near future. But based on what I know, there is no physical evidence of these structures, the pyramids at Giza, having been built by foreigners. And one of the reasons why that issue comes up is because as people like myself begin to marshal more evidence to prove that ancient Kemet was an African nation, then one of the things that those who want to separate Kemet from Africans, African people, one of the things that they do is say, well, all right, maybe the ancient Egyptians were Africans, but the pyramids were built by aliens. Rather than acknowledge that Africans had the architectural ingenuity, the engineering skills to build a structure like that, they would rather say E.T., his mama, or somebody else built these structures. And until there is solid evidence, we have to say that those structures are in Africa, they're in Kemet, and they were built at a time before Europeans walked out of the caves. This is a historical fact. We know this to be true. So, brother,
right,
you should tell your son that pyramid, the great pyramid of Khufu, not Cheops, but Khufu. Cheops is his Greek name. Khufu is his African name. That pyramid was designed by a brother named Huni. We know the name of the architect.
That's right.
Who was responsible for designing that structure. And it was supposedly modeled after the first pyramid ever built, the first building of stone ever created, that was designed by an African by the name of Imhotep for his king Zoser. So we know the names of these people. We have images of these people, and they are not extraterrestrials. They look just like you and me. So until more evidence comes along to make us change the story, this is what we're sticking with, because
is
what all the facts show us. So let's deal with facts. And not deal with supposition or theory until we have a reason to change our conversation.
But what I'm saying is, my question is, we as black people, was we from another planet and made
Brother, look, now look, I mean, I could have a private conversation with you about that, about my theories, but as long as I'm on the air, I'm going to talk about facts. Things that have been proven, things that I know. Just for convenience sake, my personal belief is that I don't think for 1 minute that of all the billions of stars and planets and solar systems out here that we are the only ones out here in this vast universe. I don't believe that for a second. But what we do know is that the very first people on this planet were people who came from Africa, and that we do know for a fact that every person on this planet carries within their body the DNA of those first African men and African women. We know that for a fact. If the possibility exists of life on other planets, then there's a very strong possibility that those people on other planets look like the very first inhabitants of this planet, folks that we would classify today as black.
Okay,
and we're in full agreement with that.
That's right. Yeah. We can't fly. Maybe we flew there.
And where can I purchase the study that you do on DVD or book form?
Well, if you want the Hidden Colors DVD, you can go to their website, hiddencolors.com, and purchase that DVD. And I would suggest that you purchase it from the brother as opposed to purchasing it from Amazon.
Yes.
Black bookstores are selling it, so go to a black bookstore, support a black business, circulate your money in our community. That. My materials are available online at my website, ikg-info.com, ikg-info.com. Support black businesses first. And if you can't get it from us, then you go outside of our community to purchase something for you and let your son see you doing that so that he'll know how to spend his money and your money.
Right. No problem.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Brother Brandon. We appreciate the call so much and hope you continue to be part of the Elevated Places family. Excellent question and excellent response. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in real quick and because one
okay,
of the
real
points,
quick, because we ran out of time.
Yeah,
one
of the things, one of the brothers that brought up that we have to be very clear about is that the whole, I've heard the conversation about black people from other planets and all that, but the reality is that sometimes there's two points that I wanted to bring up real quick. One is that we have been dumbed down so much and we've been denied the history of our ancestors that we can't even believe that we are so intelligent and we had so much intelligence that this white man has today, that we have intelligence way past these cell phones that we got today. We've had knowledge way past that. And we just can't believe that we have so much intelligence and we don't understand how destruction has broken us down. And then two, the other part of it is that we will get so far gone that we forget about dealing with the reality of food, clothing, and shelter of our communities here on the planet right now. Now, when we start going way out there, how does that relate to feeding the 30 to 40 million black people on our planet that are suffering, that need jobs and need a reality right now? So sometimes we do take things way out instead of relating it to the common everyday reality that our people are dealing with.
Yes, sir, absolutely. That is absolutely the truth. And as we're coming down to 5 minutes, this is such a wonderful, wonderful discussion, and Brother Anthony, so enlightening. I want to get at least one more in. We got Brother Hoyle. He's been holding for quite some time, calling in from 901 area code. Is your mic open? Are you on? Walaikum salam.
I've been a fan of this brother for years, and he's part of my awakening. You know, I want to say, I just want to say assalamu alaikum to the crew, Dr. Ridgely, and the rest of the Brother Terrence and Brother Browder. You've been an excellent. I wanted to tell you, I want to thank you. I gave that tape to my son, history teacher, and it blew him away. Some of the students, he said he had to teach it in his classroom, and I wish this would be a curriculum. Is there any way, Brother Browder, and I know we don't have long, that you can set up a curriculum, maybe with some of the brothers and sisters in the nation, or an online curriculum to teach like homeschool? Because your teachings are powerful. I was telling people, that's awesome. If you can get a population that you can start from preschool all the way up to high school, get some kind of, are you thinking about that?
Well, you know, one of the things that I have chosen to do is to produce material to be used in a classroom or a homeschool setting. So, and that's one of the reasons why all of my materials are being used in elementary schools, high schools, and colleges all around the world. So we've been working on developing the textbooks as well as study guides, which make it easier for the teachers to use this material. As part of the project that we're doing, the excavation project, we have established the creation of cultural circles, which are community groups that we're encouraging people to form, and we already have a curriculum in place that will give you specific materials to read in order to gain a basic understanding of Nile Valley culture so that you can articulate that information in your setting, wherever that setting is. So if you go to our website, ASARestorationProject.com, you'll see information about the excavation. You'll see information about the cultural circles and how you can establish one in your own community so that you can be a catalyst for helping to spur the advancement of this information where you live. I can't be everywhere. I can't do everything, but we can certainly multiply our works and make these works accessible to people all over the world, which is what we have been doing.
And also, like I said, if we get this with developing economic programs to do for self and be economically independent, you know, I want to say this and before I go, Mother Tynetta talked about 0 point. She said 0 point is returning to the source or the origin of all things, beginning with God himself. 0 points in the heavens above is connected to our home planet Earth, where the original people first settled on the best part located in the holy city of Mecca in Arabia, along on the banks of the Nile Valley of Egypt. And that's Kemet. And one more question, brother, before we go. What about Ethiopia? They're talking about the oldest bones in Ethiopia. Can you explain that right quick?
Well, very basically, if we go to Chancellor Williams' Destruction of African Civilization, he refers to Egypt as Ethiopia's oldest daughter.
Okay.
Oh, excellent.
Okay. No, thank you. I got so much. We come back, brother. So, David, thank you for having us.
I want to thank the Elevated Places team also because, Brother Anthony, you are phenomenal. And so as soon as your schedule allows, we really have to have you back because we're down to under 2 minutes and we still have people waiting to talk to you. And I know you can barely scratch the surface of your work in a one-hour time period.
Well, it was supposed to be 20 minutes, wasn't it?
Originally, and we knew that wasn't going to
well,
be.
Well, I knew that too, so it's okay.
Yeah. But you also don't want to take a scholar and just say, well, you just sit on my show for 90 minutes. You know?
Right.
But this has been phenomenal, and we definitely, as soon as you are available, if we can schedule a part two. But what I wanted you to do is give those websites one more time, the websites that you would like the listeners to have to come back in.
Sure. Well, we've got two websites, and both of them are linked. So the easiest one to remember is IKG-info.com, IKG-info.com, and that would take you to our other website on the excavation, which is the ASA Restoration Project, ASARestorationProject.com. You'll find information on both sites about how you can contribute to our project because we need support from our community to do this work, and you'll also find a schedule of some of our speaking engagements that we'll be doing, a screening of Hidden Colors in Washington, D.C. on the 11th of January at 7 o'clock. So that information is on our website.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, listen, Brother Anthony Browder, thank you so much. Thank you, Dr. Ridgely, Brother Terrence, and the listeners for your insightful questions so that we can benefit from this kind of brilliance and from drawing from our brother such incredible information that and the things that he's doing that are happening in our midst right now. So please go to these websites. Let's support our own. And may Allah, God bless all of us with love, light, and understanding. And Allah willing, we will be with you next Thursday. Thank you all so much. Assalamu alaikum.
Thank you for listening to Elevated Places with Dr. Ava Muhammad. Be sure to join us every Thursday here on blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces.